to play in the Super Bowl against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Vernon hands the Lynch left side. Finds a little bit of a hole. Keeps his leg moving. He's across the 40. Midfield. 45. He's on the run, Lynch. 40. Pushes him at 35. Look at him go. He's down to 20. 15. He could go. He is going to go. Touchdown, Seahawks. Oh, my word. A 67-yard run. Marshawn Lynch. Unbelievable. The beast is alive and well.
Wide receivers to either side. Russell takes the snap. He drops back.
To the middle. It's intercepted. Going the other way. He's out across the 30, the 40, midfield, down the far sideline. Is he going to outrun everybody? He is. It's Bobby Wagner from the goal line. 99 yards. He lays down in the end zone. Somebody bring him oxygen.
It has been decided maybe since the safety in the first quarter. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks Super Bowl 48 champion.
Ladies and gentlemen, Seahawks and football fans everywhere, a very warm welcome back to the We Talk Seahawks podcast. I hope you're all doing well. As you can tell by the tones in my voice, quite downtrodden this week, quite downbeat. We're not going to make this, as I put out a little disclaimer here, we're not going to make this a typical We Talk Seahawks game review where we come on and talk about the game in isolation that's just played, because we feel like tonight it needs to be a more generalised conversation in terms of just what the fuck is going on with the Seattle Seahawks, to be perfectly honest with you. The Rams game has just come and brought a lot of things to a head and to a bit of a crossroads and a bit of a turning point. And it would be wrong for us to just focus entirely on the Rams game, because in reality, the problems extend far beyond the Rams game. But they've just been uber highlighted this week. We are, of course, going to talk about bits from the Rams game, obviously. But the broader message tonight is the three of us just shooting the shit, having crisis talks, as we're calling this podcast, just to try and figure out where we're all at, what we all think is just going wrong, and seeing if we can find common denominators and maybe explain what's going on and whether it can be fixed this season or whether this is potentially terminal and may only change when changes are made. It's going to be an interesting one. Lots of opinions will be flying around the room. There will be F-bombs tonight, so mum and dad, if you're in a car or whatever and you've got kids in the car or anything like that, maybe turn it down a bit or stick, I don't know, heart on or capital, whatever, for now, and listen to it when you get home. I don't know. It's probably going to be one that isn't best recommended for young ears. But we'll try and make it as lighthearted and as fun as we always do. We'll have a laugh at our own expense, or at the Seattle Seahawks' expense. But no more rambling from me in the intro. Let's get the lads in. Pez, how are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. I'm good.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Ready to. It's been annoying because this season, you see the team, you see the players. You see glimpses of potential there. You get a little bit excited. And any of our long listeners know my conversation, depending on what week it is, reverts back to one single man. The captain of the ship. And it's took me to week, what are we on, 11?
Yep.
Yeah, took me to week 11. I think that's the longest I've been without sounding out about him. So he's done well for himself. He got some nice glue on that mask, didn't he?
He did. Some WD-40 on it, some Gorilla Glue, whatever it was. But now Pez is here to tear it down, aren't you?
Well, they've done that to themselves. I'm just going to take the final little pieces off it.
Good lad. Good lad. That's what you're best at. Mitch, how are you, mate?
Yeah, good. Disappointed. I think we all had high hopes for this year, and we felt like we'd stuck another good draft class on top of the last one that which had come good. And a lot of us expected, you know, a little bit more from Gino, a little bit more from Clint Hurt, a little bit more from Waldron. They're all sort of, they've all been there a little while now. And honestly, I think it's just feeling like it's falling so far short of the potential it had. And I think when after watching the Rams game, the obvious two things are play calling and discipline. And I think when you know, you see that many flags across the season, I think we were averaging 8 a game. We had 12 in this game. That's appallingly bad. You'd highlighted, James, that we'd been very bad on flags. In fact, league worst one of the last couple of years, and bottom five in another. You know, that's now that exactly proves the angle I'm going to come from tonight, that when things haven't been fixed for so long, the focus shifts onto, as Pez says, the captain of the ship. And there are, you know, you can look at the individual mistakes leading to the flags, but actually the overall trend comes back to Pete, I feel, and Shane Waldron with some unimaginative play calling when we really need to be able to turn the tide of a game or adapt to what's in front of us. And we've shown an inability again. And if that again comes back to Pete, when it keeps happening for me, that's where I am.
I just like to say, because we started very doom and gloom, so anyone who's not decided to go, fuck this, I can't be bothered. It sounds doom and gloom. It sounds like the season's over. I listen to like all of us speak and we're making it sound like the season's over. But it's just simply for, I think we all feel it's an inflection point of the season, because we all said it, if we can't beat the Rams, the four games we're about to go into, them Niners, like, they ain't fucking around. They're going to destroy us. If I don't even know how we change what in such a short couple of days. I really don't know what we do with that, but it ain't looking pretty.
I think we'll win some of it. This is going to sound a little, this is positive, with a positive Pez moment here. It'll be the most Seahawky thing to lose games like that, like we did the first game of the season, and then just turn up again in an away game against the Lions. That's exactly the kind of thing that we always do. But that will also annoy me more because we keep saying, oh, you know, the roster's better than it was last year. And, you know, the coaches have been there an extra year. You know, they'll be able to evolve the offense a bit more. And, you know, a lot of the team have been there and they know the system. Okay, so where is that improvement? Where is the consistency that we should be seeing from that? And it's not there. Well, it'll be so Seahawky to embarrass ourselves and then just come back and win a game. That inconsistency is the kind of thing that will stop you going past one game in the playoffs. You need to turn your team into a machine that just churns wins, establishes its DNA and what it does on offense and defense, gets consistent with it, drafts players to add to that system, not struggle to know what the offense is, you know, and what we do. It just, we're spluttering and starting and spluttering and stopping, and that's what's going to stop us being more than a one and done team in the playoffs. Where we are now, it's like an 85% shot to make the playoffs. Fine. We always knew this season that was going to be more or less where we are. The problem we all had was we're always one game and done. It's because we don't establish a proper identity and consistency. Those flags that we keep getting undermine everything as well.
Yeah, I took a... try and get some positives out there. The Seahawks are one of the best teams at bouncing back from a loss. If anyone wants to glimmer and cling on to any hope they possibly can, they've got like one of the best records for bouncing back after a loss. Pete Carroll has. He's going to have to pull a rabbit out of that fucking large hat of his.
I'll add to that, Pez. I'll give you another positive. We've actually got a really, really good record at beating ourselves. I feel like we're the best team in the league at actually beating ourselves at this point.
No, I just yes, with that, like, it might sound doom and gloom, but at the end of the day, it is like there's no point people blindly hoping that. Do you know what? This is the first season I've had in a while where I've seen the narrative be all in the same direction and not so much, you know, not so much tension and conflict between the fan base. I think everyone's a bit disheartened after what they've seen this year. And it's interesting that the fan base, because normally you see it where someone will say something as bold to say, Pete should have gone years ago, and you'll get someone, the majority going, you're a fucking idiot. You don't know what you're talking about. You're not a proper Seahawks fan. You're just a toxic fan and all this, that, and the other. Whereas people are putting them things out there and they're like, maybe not that long, but yeah, he should have gone by 2020. So it's like now people are starting to get on the same page. So unfortunately, we're not in a franchise where the owner would give a crap what the noise said.
Thank you. I've been sitting here festering, just letting you guys shoot the shit. But you've just said the exact thing. The Seahawks are one of the worst run organizations in the NFL at this moment in time. It's absolutely fucking pathetic, to be honest with you. It's absolutely embarrassing, and I really wish Paul Allen was still with us, to be honest with you, because to be honest with you, Jordy Allen is an absolutely pathetic excuse for an owner. I'm sorry to use that word, but she is a pathetic excuse of an owner. She's inherited this amazing franchise by the facto of being related to Paul Allen. She hasn't given a shit about it since day one. She can't wait to sell it in 2025. She doesn't have the backbone to fire a coach who has been treading water and living off his reputation and a Super Bowl run and win for years now. So this isn't going to change until 2025. Pete's here till 2025. The team will be sold in 2025. Until then, the team are in limbo. We're neither here nor there. We're neither rebuilding. We're neither competing. We're just stuck at being a one and done wildcard team. And that's, for me, that's worse. I'd rather be the rebuilding, or I'd rather be contending. Give me a plan. Give me a clear strategy. I'm happy with that, whether it's rebuilding and some shit years. But just being stuck in limbo and just being neither here or there is worse for me. Continuous false dawns just annoy the fuck out of me. So this is absolutely pathetic from the top brass, in my opinion. And whoever it is, I cannot wait for new owners to come into. It can't come soon enough, because this ownership is not an ownership. I don't even want to call it an ownership, because she might have it, but ownership implies that you care about it, you tend to it, you manage it. In my opinion, she doesn't own it. She's just been given it. It's just a present that she doesn't want. It's like getting a shit present at Christmas. You get a crap pair. Do you know what I mean? And you receive it. You're grateful for it, but you don't really want it. She's being, oh yeah, I'm really grateful. I can sell this in 2025. Brilliant. Oh yeah, I've been given it, but I don't want to play with it. I don't want it. I'm not fussed about it. I've just got it. I've just inherited it, and it bugs the shit out of me.
Yeah, I take your angle completely. I think ever since she's come in, it's kind of looked like a custodianship of, you know, it's an inheritance that
we've seen her once just, on that draft
on the draft year, night. Yeah, draft yeah, night, yeah, once. Yeah.
Doesn't say anything. Doesn't appear anywhere. Just
yeah, and I think as well with. To sort of include Pete in that as well, with you're saying about 2025 and expecting a change of ownership and that coinciding with the last part of his contract. I don't see I can't see a coach of his age getting a new contract at that point from the new ownership. It's going to feel very much like a changing of the guard. But that leads me into thinking that, and I mentioned it in the pre-draft process, that this feels like 2 or 3 years for Pete to push towards another Super Bowl or bust. And the draft classes we've seen have kind of looked like that. And staying with Geno rather than drafting a quarterback looks like that. Getting key players in key areas like linebacker and safety with experience and having experience in those places rather than drafting those positions as starters. That looks like that. So if we're not achieving anything this year and we don't look like we've improved this year, what's the point in having another 2 years of Pete Carroll if we're not moving towards a Super Bowl? He's just, you know, the ownership and the leadership of the franchise is just on a merry-go-round. We're just going round and round and round, one and done in the playoffs, one and done if we make it that far. And drafting players that won't want to stay, they'll want to go after their contracts because we're not a contending franchise. That feels like a merry-go-round that we really don't want to be on. And again, that's a negative angle, but it's really just based off the fact that, like you say, our ownership don't feel like they're on the pulse of what's happening here and don't seem driven to drive us on to anything new. They're just, you know, happy to just own it and, you know, do nothing. So I think Pete Carroll's situation ties massively into that.
Yeah, well, for me, you bring up Pete. I've not really got anything more to say about Jody, except for since he's been in charge, Pete's just acquired more and more control and power over this team. So it's almost like he, again, like I always say, he runs the ship. Anyone who's listened to us will know by seeing the title of this podcast what I am going to say and the angle I'm going to come from. Like, it's because I've been banging on about this. My brother saw it early doors. And I was like, no, don't be stupid. The year after, I was like, all right, I see what you mean. And then it came more and more noticeable. And you saw the noise of the fan base getting more and more, like going 90%, you're all idiots for saying Pete needs to go. To now, it's the pendulum's all the way on the other side. But he controls too much. He has too much power with Jody there. She might as well just sign the club over to him as a temporary owner until she gets the chance to sell the thing. Like, it's ridiculous. But then this is where everything ends on Pete. We've gone around the houses over these last couple of weeks about Waldron. Last year we went around the houses about Clint Hurt. We went around the houses about Gino. But that, I was trying my best to not bring him up because I don't want to sound like a broken record on this podcast like I have done the last couple of years. I said before the season started, said to James, I'm going to try my best not to bash Pete as much because, like, if it doesn't need to be done, doesn't need to be done. But the more I sit back and think about everything, none of it makes sense to me. None of this makes sense to me with Waldron being the problem, this being the problem, that being a problem. I don't understand. If Pete's in control, I don't understand why this year he's all of a sudden gone, I'm going to take a back seat. Shane, you control the situation. And people then would say, yeah, but we've not run the ball that much. So what? So this team, for me, my way to sum this team up, year in, year out, is every single year they put a new mask on. Get a new mask on, the face. Oh, it's a beautiful little thing, gets the fans all excited. But at some point in that season, and this could go all the way to the playoffs, like you've just spoke about, the one and done situation pisses me off more than anything in the world. And I have arguments with the way American see sports and British see sports. Two completely different things. Americans are like, yeah, making the playoffs is a massive feat. You're ungrateful. Like, you can't win the championship all the time. I'm not stupid. And no, you can't win the championship all the time. But I want to be at least feeling like this team could challenge for the championship all the time. Or, as James says, building pieces to challenge. We're not. It's a resume of, let's just make sure we get to the playoffs and then we'll fucking figure it all out. No, do one. I've had enough of it. I've had enough of it for years. So anyway, back to the masks. So the sexy mask comes on. Through the season, it chips away, starts slipping. The heat starts, the glue starts getting unsettled. Slip, 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 slip. And at some point, that mask slips off and then what's behind it? Oh, the ugly truth that this team will never change. Never ever change, because one man runs the helm. One man is in charge of
player personnel.
He's player personnel. He's coaching personnel. He's in charge of everything. So go for Waldron, go for Clint Hurt, go for John Schneider. Go for anyone you want, but realise it doesn't matter who you fall back into. He will find a guy who's on his wavelength and he will be a fall guy. He will be a fall guy. We've seen it year in, year out. Shotty is like literally internal politics. Shotty tried to rebel against him in the Let Russ Cook. You could clearly tell Shotty was pining more towards what Russ wanted to do. What happened? He got sent up into the box and inevitably got canned. Don't get me wrong, it's not a bad thing. Schottenheimer is a terrible, terrible coordinator. But it's just the point. This team never, ever changes. Why do you think Sean McVay dummies us year in, year out? Why do you think he dummies us year in, year out? Everyone says it, but then no one wants to expand on it. Oh, McVay owns Pete. So why does anyone think we're ever going to beat the Rams? What? As long as Pete Carroll's here, because Shane Waldron, Schottenheimer, any other OC you want, McVay will always beat us because he knows Pete Carroll. And he knows this team will inevitably run how Pete wants it to run. Whether that's running the ball loads, passing more, whatever. Pete controls the helm. You saw it on the broadcast. You literally saw it on the broadcast. Waldron is talking to someone on the mic with Pete running in his face, shouting at him whilst he's trying to talk. Almost like it looked, from a memory, it looked like he was calling a play to Gino whilst Pete's shouting in his ear. No, mate. If he's calling a fucking play, leave the guy alone. You should have had that done. Don't. It was like he was trying to tell him to emphasise, like, do a certain thing, do a certain thing. But Waldron's...
I think it's undoubted that Pete is in his ear suggesting being heavily... But for me, I think it is ultimately still sort of Waldron calling the majority of the game, in my opinion. But we'll get on to Waldron after Pete, because I think we're hitting on Pete at the minute, and fair enough. For me, it's that game against the Rams, and from seasons past in terms of his coaching, it's the penalties in that game. I mean, it is just absolutely ridiculous. We committed 12 penalties for 130 yards against the Rams. That's the most penalty yardage against any team this season, and Seattle's most in a game since 2018. The Seahawks led the NFL in, or we do lead the NFL, sorry, in accepted penalties so far this season with 76. And we played one fewer game than some teams, obviously, because some teams haven't had their bye week. At this current pace, that puts them on track for their most since 2017, when they played just 16 games as opposed to the now 17 games. And their 639 penalty yards are the third most, and the two teams ahead of them have played 11 games. So it's absolutely ridiculous coaching. And another thing, like...
James, can I just quickly jump in, mate?
Of course you can.
I've got the solution after hearing all that. We just have to execute better.
Do you know what? I looked into that.
You just have to execute better. Honestly.
That quote. Do you know what he said in 2021 when he was, quote, really disappointed with how the Seahawks defense had started the 2021 season? The ability to, and I quote, the ability to fix these problems is really what's at hand. It's not a mystery. We just have to get better at quite a few things.
He's full of smoke screens and mirrors. He's a fucking, these cliches. His cliches are bullshit. Oh, just.
But just got to get better. We just got to improve on that.
Just got to execute better, guys.
Ridiculous.
And then that's the answer. Them flags will stop if we execute better, but them flags have been happening ever since he came to the team. It's like cancer he's kept year in, year out.
He does enable players to be themselves, doesn't he? It's a big part of Pete's philosophy is to allow players to express themselves and play their natural game and not inhibit players by, you know, telling them how to behave on the field and how, you know, that's all good and well when players feel free to, you know, go out and perform and you know, do exactly what they would always do. when they're unrestricted and whatnot. But in reality, have we not? Is he not just given the players too much room so that indiscipline creeps in? Because it does seem like a long running theme. For me, that's a good thing, but it does just allow for a bit too much. We saw it with Devon Witherspoon, and this is very, very far from a criticism of him, because he's arguably been our best player this year, and he's in his first year. So I'm not necessarily criticizing Spoon here, but the penalty he had for that suplex on the side at the sideline there after the player being blown dead was incredibly stupid, and it feels to me like a good example of players being allowed a little bit too much room to express themselves and maybe go a bit too far. What do you think, yeah. James?
I think that's an element to it. At the same time, I still think you can bring that back to poor coaching. I think some of the penalties, even still, like I was talking to you a little bit off air, Tariq Woolen's illegal hands to the face penalties. It's been killing him since he's come into the NFL, and we're deep into his second year now, and he's still having illegal hands to the face penalties. We're still not coaching that out of him. If we were owned by pretty much any other owner, Pete Carroll would have been fired. He would have never been allowed to have got to this level of power where he's practically untouchable. No head coach should be untouchable in an NFL team. Pete Carroll is as good as untouchable as you could possibly ever hope to get from a head coach. You can't fire him, and Jordy Allen wouldn't dream of firing him anyway. I'm at a loss for words, really. I don't...
Well, you mentioned coaching there. Should we move on to? Have you got anything to say? Anything else to say about Pete, Mitch, or do you want to move on to Waldron? Because I know there's a lot of choice things about Waldron. I'm gonna take a step out of this because a lot of my thing comes to aim towards Pete. So I'm just gonna let you two listen to you two, like chime about Waldron, really.
Mm. Who wants to go first?
I'm happy for you to go.
You want me to go, yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a good idea.
We'll see. Give me a few minutes, we'll see. Let me cook. Waldron. If you can't come from a Shane Waldron tree, hopefully that tree will be cut down very soon. If you can't come from a Sean McVay tree and be creative, you don't deserve a job as an offensive coordinator in the NFL. Sean McVay, one of the most creative, innovative offensive minds we've seen in the NFL. Not only was he with him with the Rams, also with him at the Washington Commanders, or as the Redskins that have been known as back then. So he's been with Sean McVay on multiple different teams, followed him around, and all he can learn how to do is script a few plays on a first drive. And once those scripted plays are used up, it's absolutely not. You can hear it through the TV. I'm not schizophrenic, but I can hear through the TV. You can hear him on the touchline laughing at the end of that first drive. Hey, that was really good. That was brilliant. That worked really well. I'll see you next week, because then it just stops. That first drive is as good a first drive as you could hope to put together. Play calls wise, execution. It was absolutely textbook. Carved them up, we did. Absolutely made them look idiots. And I'm sitting there, I said in the Discord, I'm Walt Horney. I'm back again. I'm on the train. I thought we're gonna absolutely whitewash them here. This is absolutely fantastic. And then nothing. Absolutely nothing that what we were doing for three quarters. We brought in, here's how fucking excellent our coaching is. We brought in Brett Rypien, who was on the fucking Rams, to be our quarterback three for no fucking reason, so he could offer insight into how the Rams defense works, how you know, calls they use, whatever, you know, how to beat their defense. What do? Absolutely ignore him. We don't even listen to him. Throw him in the corner. He'll probably rejoin the Rams next week. Tell him everything about us. Just have a good old laugh for his week in Seattle. It's a lovely place. You know, I went for a walk around the park, had a chat with Pete Carroll. He's an idiot, isn't he? Yeah. And don't listen to him. Absolutely don't listen to him. Shane Waldron just does what he wants. And we don't run the football. I'm sorry, Zach Charbonnet, killing them, absolutely killing them. He was looking fantastic, as he has been in the past few weeks. Do you know, after that Matthew Stafford interception, because that great quarterback, that's, by the way, that's the different levels in coaching. How Sean McVay can get wins out of Matthew Stafford at his stage, and we can't get wins out of our team. But after that Matthew Stafford interception, on the next two drives, here you are, fucking genius, this. Pass, run, pass, punt, pass, 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 interception. Ran the ball once. Do you know how many yards of on-the-ground running yards, rushing yards we got in the second half? 14 rushing yards in the second half. Do you know what? It's absolutely fucking pathetic. He's meant to be an offensive coordinator. Get him, just get him out. He's come from the Sean McVay tree, the most creative tree you could hope to come from, and he's absolutely he hasn't got a creative bone in his body. We don't target the midfield. You've just spent a 20th overall pick on one of the best over the middle receivers we've seen coming out of college, and I don't know how long. What do we do? Don't throw it to him over the middle of it. Fuck right off, to be honest with you, Shane Waldron. I could go further. Even when fucking Drew Lock came in, what are we doing there? I mean, what to be in fairness,
That was the worst bit for him, because he's shown in previous games, he's shown a lack of ability to adapt to what's happening in the game. In that moment, we had a backup quarterback go in, and he didn't lean on the run game to help him out. He didn't lean on the tight ends to help him out. He just had him throwing deep balls, and it was absurd how he had a backup quarterback come in, didn't give him an easy set of plays to warm up, just had him letting loose. Like, manage the game, manage the backup quarterback, manage the situation, because we were leading at that point. He didn't do any of those things.
Yeah. Do you know what it is as well? Third down is right. It's hilarious. I love it. Absolutely hilarious. Fucking genius, man. Shane Waldron calls a running play on third and short, so third and three, that is, or less, just 32% of the time. Right? Is it any surprise, then, that we're probably the worst team in the NFL on third down? I mean, you only run the ball 32% of the time on third and short. It's just pathetic.
Would it not be hilarious if we played like this? Pete sacked Shane Waldron and went, we need to get back to the fundamentals and run the football more. So basically, saw it was going to ratchet, let Shane Waldron just pass the ball loads, knowing full well all people know is the identity is running the football. Hide behind that, sack Shane Waldron, and then rinse and repeat for another fresh mask on his face so he can get another year out of it.
I'd say whatever you want about any of our players. I don't blame any of them. I don't blame Gino. I don't blame Drew Lock. I don't blame any players on this team, because they are being so...
What about Jason Peters?
Don't blame him. Don't blame him.
Wow, that is a strong statement.
Don't blame him, because it's a revolving door on the right side of our offensive line, because one player is Phil Haynes, then it's Anthony Bradford, and we wonder why we can't get any consistent offensive line play. Fucking horrendous coaching. Geno Smith actually had a 94.4 passer rating in that game. 94.4. That's fine. Matthew Stafford had a 70 passer rating. Matthew Stafford wins the football game. I don't blame Geno Smith. I do not blame any of these coaches. Do we trust, right, that we'll draft good players?
Yeah.
Do we trust that this team has talent, and has talent on offense, and has talent on defense?
Yes.
Do you trust them to be coached well?
No.
Well, there's your answer.
Some of the positions I do.
I don't.
Genuinely, some of them I do. I think this will be controversial, because I think the way we've planned the rotation of them in game has been really bad on the offensive line. But I actually think Dickerson's a fantastic offensive line coach. Genuinely.
Yeah.
I think the way we've managed our personnel in games has been shocking. When you look at the injuries we've had and the way we've overcome it, the best way we found to overcome it was by gluing tight ends to our tackles. And what has been terrible is the way we've rotated personnel. I almost feel like players would have improved and done a better job if they'd been allowed to learn from their mistakes and stay in and battle through it. But rotating them after, you know, so often doesn't allow any of them to get into a groove. And sometimes on offense, when it's working for you, keep them out there. First drive, look at that offensive line and what we put together. Keep them out there. Let them take that momentum and move it forward. The actual coaching of them, the techniques, the improvements we've seen on some of our offensive line has been outstanding with Dickerson there. The only exception, the only player we've drafted that's truly regressed as an offensive lineman is D'Lou. He's the only player that's a worse player now or the same player after 4 years. He's the only player that hasn't put it together, and I put that more on him than I do on the coaching. But genuinely, I think Dickerson's absolutely fantastic. Just the way we've managed that offensive line room in game and rotation wise has been shocking. We've really, really badly mismanaged that.
So have you got a Waldron take, Mitch, or would you like to take us somewhere else?
No, to be honest, I think James nailed it with Waldron. I'm completely sold on him losing his job at the end of the year. And I said to James before no. we...
Fucking sack him now. If the you season isn't finished
that's
today.
Never going to do that.
I don't think it'll happen this season.
Well, then the season will end.
No, but James, I'd like it to happen, but I don't think it's something we do. But I do feel like he doesn't have a future with our franchise.
I'll throw you a question, Mitch.
Before you do, I'll just finish by just saying this. I said this to James earlier. If we don't sack Waldron, any offensive player we pick up in the draft or in the offseason this year, I'm going to feel is a waste of time just because they'll be coming into an already flawed system. I kind of want to see new coordinator, new quarterback, a new stud interior defensive lineman all come in. And I'll feel with a new offensive coordinator, there is a chance we will turn those players into better players. As it stands, I feel like they'll come in, no matter how good they are, there will be a ceiling on how good they can be because of the way that we are calling plays. That's my take. Sorry, what was your question about Waldron?
I was just about to say with what you were saying, do you not think it... I know it's a kind of bit of an empty question in the sense because, like, we all are consigned to the fate that we're not going to get rid of Pete, but is it just getting rid of Waldron? Isn't it just rinse and repeat? Aren't we just going to just see the same shit over and over and over again?
I don't think so.
How many offensive coordinators do you need with totally different styles to turn up and this team stay the same? And this isn't a pardon from Waldron. I'm not pardoning him. I'm just saying, big picture, all different play styles, but this team stays the same. This team can't get past the hump. This team can't get past one and done.
But for me, I think A, you have to, because you have to set a precedent of a standard, and B, I think Pete Carroll hates his offense being shit because he's the defensive guy. As long as his defense is all right, he's fine. He's doing his job in his mind. I know we don't think like that, but in his mind, as long as the defense is looking all right, which it has been, granted that's more down to Clint Hurt in my opinion, then that's fine. If his defense is keeping him in games and the offense isn't working, I think that's what turns him in his grave in my opinion. So I think he will fire Waldron. He has to fire Waldron. I'd fire him right now. Otherwise, the season's over with the way this offense is being run. And like I said to you guys before, for people who keep bashing Geno, tell me any quarterback in the NFL, maybe bar Mahomes, and I even put a question mark over that comes in this system and looks good and operates and functions.
Yeah, and I think when Gino went out in this game, we got a real stark contrast in quarterback quality. And I think you really got a chance to see what it looks like without Gino in there.
What I would say about that, I said it in the Discord when James was hot, I will defend Drew Locke here and say, you cannot. That game was falling to pieces before Drew Locke came in. You cannot use that against Drew Locke. It's bollocks. Even top billing, and I like a lot of his work, to turn around and go, you got what you wish for. No. You cannot expect anyone like at Drew Locke's level as a backup to come into a game and then dominate the game. All his throws were out of time. Everything was out of time. I disagree with anyone who tries holding that against Drew Lock. One thing I will let everyone hold against Drew Lock, his body language on that sideline was
shocking.
Fucking pathetic. Stood there watching the game like, this
laughing.
Is sick. No,
he was laughing.
You're the starting
quarterback. The laughing thing wound a lot of people up.
Yeah. You're the starting quarterback, mate. You need to be figuring out, like, you training camp, you're thrown to these guys. Go to Waldron and go, listen, Cody Thompson, who's not done anything and will pull a hammy after a first play, I pass to him nearly every single day. Put him on the fucking field and I will make something happen because I'm comfortable with him. He knows my timing. I know his timing. We have a rhythm. Fuck everything else. Get him on the field. Give me a chance.
But that speaks to the offensive coordinator recognizing that he's got his backup quarterback out there, making adjustments, helping manage the game. Because I know you're saying it was going to shit. We'd had a few sort of three and outs and you know, screwed drives before Gino got injured, right? But we were still leading the game when Gino went out. So there was a game to manage there. There was a lead that we could protect. You could lean on the run game, put it in the air less, use the tight ends, use a bit of yak. You know, you can put Drew Lock in a situation to succeed and help him manage the game rather than some of the plays that were called it looked like we were hanging him out to dry with some of those plays. It was like you'd throw those plays in for a quarterback who had already completed 16 out of 20 or 16 out of 25, you know, a touchdown in the game. You've set up the deep ball, perhaps take some shots. You work your way into that situation. You don't just go, right, Lock, in you go. First ball's a straight one down the middle to JSN. Granted, it nearly worked, but they weren't on the same page. They're not going to be.
Timed.
Don't call shit like that. Let him get into the game. Have a few drives where you just lean on the running game and take what's offered to you with intermediates and shorts and try and get a couple of drives going. Doesn't even matter if you don't score on them. Wind the clock down, manage the game, get your rhythm, get people firing, then start taking your shots. Manage the game, Shane Waldron. Don't just chuck a backup quarterback in and expect him to pull off Gino throws or Russ throws. You know, just that was nuts to me.
Yeah, it's almost like play action as well. Drew Lock's got wheels, man. Mm. Get him running. Just get him running.
Third and two.
It's almost like, it's almost like as well, the way they played him, everything you said there, Mitch, do you know what I thought in my head? It's almost like they wanted to kill the narrative of Gino getting benched by making Drew look shit type of thing.
They didn't put him in a position to succeed, did he? They didn't, and Waldron didn't put him in a position to succeed.
So, one thing I would say on Gino, where he gets brownie points, from my opinion, is clearly that elbow was fucked, but he understood what time it was and went in. Because I watched that final drive and every single pass was wonky as anything. Yep. He probably did more damage to his arm by doing that final drive because every single pass, Gino is one of the sweetest passes of football, but you watched every single ball and it was like that.
Yeah.
Like a shit quarterback would throw. He
wasn't right.
All credit. Well, he clearly isn't because he might not be playing on Thursday, but that's just brownie points to Gino for even just to, you know, like, listen, I need to get back in this game type thing.
It's a weird one, isn't it? Because I think Gino comes out of that game with quite a lot of credit. Even like there haven't been many games this year we've lost where we've come out of it giving too much credit to Gino. And I think maybe this game kind of flipped the script a little bit on where the blame lies with everything that's going on. For me, he's now taking less than 20% of our offensive blame. And that's probably the lowest I would have had fall at his feet all year. And I think just as we go on through the year, same problems are popping up every week, and they're less and less looking like they're Gino issues, and they're more looking like they are systemic issues and you know, the way that the franchise is run. There's only one person in our front office and in the leadership of our franchise that I think is truly doing an A-star job year on year, and it's John Schneider. And I think he doesn't have the power needed as a GM to be able to turn it around. I think too much of that has drifted to Pete for him to be able to restabilize the ship. That's a real shame, because I think we might find ourselves in a position in a few years' time where John Schneider is the GM of a different franchise, and we'll see that franchise drafting well, coaching well, driving the ship in the right direction consistently. And I think we'll miss him if we don't keep hold of him. And that'll be a shame.
He'll walk hand in hand out the door with Pete.
Yeah.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, 100%.
Came in together, they'll leave together.
But not if Pete's retiring. If Pete's retiring, I think there's a chance there.
I think John, well, do you know what? He'll tell everything. He'll tell if they were on the same wavelength, or if John feels like he's been undermined by Pete long enough, he wants another chance to kind of redeem himself with the new coach type thing.
I don't know if you were Pete and you were leaving, right? If your contract was up and you were leaving, the age is up, do you really want to go into... I mean, if anyone takes Sean as a head coach and it's not halfway through the season and you're sort of doing like an interim job, genuinely, I don't see Pete going there and going, yeah, I'm here for the next 5 years. I've got this plan. And, you know, we're going to do this. We're going to target this kind of player. There's no way a team invests in him for the future. And if you're John Schneider, you've got what, another 20, 25 years in this industry, maybe 15, 20, right? You're not going to throw away a GM job somewhere where you're settled just because someone who's retiring within the next few years is going. You're not going to find a new franchise together.
Think about it like this, how I think about it. If I was the owner coming to buy a franchise, what's had successful history, but it's gone stale, anyone walking in, making a business decision, we'll see that. They'll look at who's in the front office, who's at the top, and they'll go, these last two draft classes carry on next year. These last three draft classes have been really good. Who's that down to? GM, John Schneider, makes all their moves. Let's get rid of the old guy. Let's keep John, because whilst I'm transitioning into buying this team, I want someone who's been in this franchise for many years to help me
stabilize.
Basically, help me stabilize the ship with experience. And I think John would love that, because a lot of the control in Pete's last contract, what he kind of took over John with in charge of player personnel and all these things, what a GM kind of does, John's going to get all his control back. And if anything, more, because the new owner will probably lean on him.
I completely agree. And I think John's stock is higher now than it's almost ever been. Maybe other than post two Super Bowls in a row and the draft classes they had then. I think it might have dipped a little, but I think his stock's right back up where it was. And I think John will be a better GM once Pete's gone, because anyone coming in, he'll know, okay, with Pete, he got a bit too much power, he had a bit too much control. I know now he'll know what to relinquish and what to keep hold of. Do you know what I mean? I think John will be in a better position to run a franchise with a new coach that he can kind of help establish where their responsibilities end and where they begin. I think John will be a better GM for that. Whether we keep him is another thing, because I think there's a lot of franchises that would absolutely kill to have John Schneider. He's a top five GM in this league at a top 10 franchise, top 15 maybe this year. And he can do better than us. And I don't know that we'd get someone better than him. So, you know, that's sad, because he's a guy that I love. I love listening to John Schneider talk about the way he talks about the Seahawks. You know, it's brilliant. As a fan, I absolutely love listening. I could listen to him all day talking about their processes and the way they value the people around the franchise. But this franchise doesn't deserve him at this moment in time. And it's been allowed, the control has been allowed to flow away from him. And I don't feel like he has enough control to be able to fully fix things, which is a shame. That's how I feel about John.
Yep, that was a nice Hopefully John will listen to that, because that was nice. Probably
I hope John's hiring.
Nicest thing, yeah, nicest thing a Seahawks fan said to John, because they kind of get banded together, don't they, whether he likes it or not. But
there is one thing for me, the Frank Clark situation on the right-hand side of the line, getting a lion's share of snaps. We only saw 6 snaps for Derek Hall this week, and we gave like 40-odd to Clark. And then we've got Draymond Jones that we're trying to square peg into a round hole around. And I think it's the role he can do, but they're putting him in there around Frank Clark. I'd rather see Frank Clark, Derek Hall, even split, and Draymond Jones as the starter there to first and foremost stop the run. You know, do you know what I mean? I feel like they're kind of a little confused with what they're doing with Frank Clark. They're not committed to Frank Clark. It's not like he's someone they've drafted and they're committed to for years on end. He's there to apply an instant kind of impact. And it feels like we're trying to sort of help him rediscover himself. And I've never seen a player drop off as quickly as he has. He looks completely washed. He doesn't look anything like himself. And I don't think I've ever seen a player go from a serious sort of blue chip X factor player to the player we're seeing now.
108 snaps. Sorry, Pez.
Sorry, I was just going to say, the thing is with Frank Clark, hasn't he always been like that? Like, with his good years in Seattle, he had Jaron Reed. He goes to the Chiefs. He has some good games. Doesn't have great games. My mate's a Chiefs fan. He goes, he kind of turns up in some big games, what gives him name credibility, but throughout the season, he doesn't do much. And then when he does do it, it's because Chris Jones is there wrecking shop. But then when he's relied to do it on his own,
it's not really, I mean, it's not really on his own. This defensive line's been superb all year. You've got Maffei and Williams, and Jaron Reed's been red hot. Mario Edwards has been. It's not like there's a lack of talent on that line. But
I'm just talking through his career as a player in total, this year.
Any player playing the edge in the Seahawks team right now with that defensive line and the quality in that edge room should be able to get some freedom, get enough one-on-one situations. He's playing one-on-one situations all the time, and he can't beat his man. It doesn't matter whether it's a top five tackle in this league or whether it's a bottom five one. He seems to be really struggling to put the moves on anyone right now.
108 snaps for Frank Clark this season. 3 hurries, no quarterback hits, no sacks, 3 missed tackles, 3 tackles, and no tackles for loss.
It's a whole lot of nothing.
Yeah, he can. Let's play Derek Hall, a guy we've invested in, shall we? Hey, could we see some more of him, please? And what loyalty have we got to Frank Clark in this situation right now? I mean,
yeah, for the defense overall. Except for what we mentioned at the start of the show with the flags and a few of the coaching situations with like Reek doing hands to the face and, you know, shit like that. Spoon, I don't really care. Like, yeah, he shouldn't have done it. And if you really want to nitpick, it probably could have cost us points. But I fucking love that shit, to be quite honest.
That's the spoon flex is an absolute WWE move that I need to see over and over.
An absolute monster, because do you know what? A guy like him, yes, if you really want to be nitpicky and really sour and bitter, you could go, oh, well, he cost us this down and we could have done this and we could have done that, but we wouldn't have stopped them by that point. The defense was shot. Everything just went to rat shit. But before that, for me, the defense did a really good job.
Yeah,
it's when the offense fell to pieces, the defense just seemed to go with him. Like, fair enough, they're a team, because once one slid, they all jumped on that bobsleigh together and were fucking down there early in the second. I couldn't believe, I was so chilled on my sofa for a Rams game. Like, and normally when I have that feeling like I'm chilled and not bothered, it's like, we've got this in the bag. We had it in the bag. And then Gino went down and it's like, oh, Gino's injured. Everyone jump on the sledge. We're going downhill. Boom. And
we lost Kenny Walker as well. And I know we did okay without him for a while, but he's a big part of our offense. That's a big loss too.
It is, but the defense was holding their own. Like James said, with Stafford, they were getting to him. They were hurrying him. The secondary was shutting shit down.
Julian, but did you see? Did you see how good our defense was when we were putting proper long drives together? We had a 13 play drive, a 14 play drive, and the defense was getting three and outs or five and outs. You know, it was absolutely sorry. Yeah, not five and out, six and out. But you don't get a five and out unless you get a turnover. But there was so much energy and some of the plays on defense was so sort of impactful and hard hit. It's just there was so much to it. And then as soon as you're three and out, three and out, three and out, you start seeing missed tackles, you know, busted coverages, and the odd run gets snapped off, and everything just seems to start falling apart when you're expecting them to stay out there. Give them the chance to get off the field and come back out fully juiced up, and they will complement your offense by getting you straight back out there. As soon as you overwork them and you know they don't think that the offense are going to be able to put a drive together, it all just seems that, you know, the threads start coming out of it and it unravels pretty quick. So
yeah,
we saw that.
For me, there's one coach on this team at this moment in time that gets a pass from this kind of, you know, we're saying it's the coaching and a lot of it is, and that's kind of what we focus on. But there is one coach that's doing an outstanding job, and that is Clint Hurt. To be handed and to be told effectively by Pete Carroll, this is how we're playing defense, whether you like it or not. You're not putting your own stamp on it. We're playing soft coverage. We always do it. I've always done it tough. Work with it. We know how outdated it is. We know how exploited it is. We know how teams take advantage of it, and Pete Carroll won't change it for anything. So for Clint Hurt, as his first role as defense, his first time defensive coordinator, to come in and get our defense playing as well as it is, despite having to play the worst defensive scheme in the NFL, in terms of, it's just so outdated. It doesn't work. We know this. So to be given that and to do and produce the standard of defense that he's producing is absolutely fine. I've got no qualms about Clint Hurt continuing to be my defensive coordinator out of anything.
Yeah, definitely. Do you want some? Well, unless anyone else has got anything else to say, we'll end some positives, just some little snippets. So Devon Witherspoon has allowed less than 25 yards in coverage in six games this season. Tariq Woolen, I think in the last two games, 10 targets, four catches allowed, one interception, two forced incompletions, a passer rating of 17.9.
Love it.
That's really, really good, whether they'd be able to withstand the powerhouses we're about to play up against. I hope so, but we will see. Let me. And has anyone got anything else to add, or should we go on to? She's changed the list to what I liked, not the positives. What I liked about the game, and as James nicely said before we started recording, we've done this. This is our third week doing this now, as something to cheer us up in the dark times. But she's dumbed down a list because she enjoys us reading out her lists and laughing at me struggling.
There's a few sleepers in there that might catch you up, but on the whole, yes, it seems an easy one.
I'm looking at one and DK. Like, I'm just making sure I don't fumble that first.
Go on then.
But we'll get straight into it. There's only 10 because she normally does 12, but
I want to give her a shout out for finding 10 things, honestly. Great effort.
We're going to find out. So number one is DK, 53-yard reception. Number two is the Reek interception.
Love it.
Number three is the Spoon sack and the Spoonplex. Or soon Spoon Superplex, but Spoonplex is a lot better, Mitch. No offense, Kerry. Four, the O-line, Charbonnet, fourth down conversions.
Love it.
We didn't speak about them. They were really nice. Number five, Maffei back down. Number six, DK touchdown reception franchise record.
Yeah.
Number seven, Trey Brown, I'm guessing that is. Tackle for loss for -3 yards.
Huge play, that one.
Julian Love, number eight, Julian Love, QB pestering. he was, like we highlighted, was a beast all game.
Wasn't even just the pressures and things he was getting in coverage. He was really good, honestly. But his best game for me, that, and yeah. he's had some good ones.
Number nine, B-Wag's 12th consecutive 100 tackle season.
That's a really impressive one. And that speaks to his quality, but it also speaks to the way he's built as well. If you can go that many seasons in a row without an injury, you know, curtailing that, you've done a seriously good job looking after your body. And, yeah, shout to B-Wags.
And then number 10, Gino's post-injury grit.
Love it.
I think she's done all right, huh?
She's done really well.
Me out massively.
Yeah, I'll add two to that. And I'll add a bit of context to the DK one. If you weren't aware, DK has passed Steve Largent and Joey Galloway with 38 receiving touchdowns. That's the most in a player's first five seasons in Seahawks franchise history. So fair play to DK. Tyler Lockett as well. We have to give a mention to him. He's moved up into second place in the all-time receptions and receiving yards in franchise history. He passes Brian Blades. And it's not more of a positive. It's more of a fun fact just to cheer me up because it made me laugh. It got me in hysterics when I read it. You know, I don't like this guy. None of us really have a fond likening to DS Gridge. But this made me laugh. If you haven't seen it, I'm sure it'll make you laugh as well. Jake Bobo has more receiving yards and touchdowns this season than D. Askridge has in his entire career. D. Askridge was a second-round pick in 2021. That just made me chuckle. And in a way, that is a positive, isn't it? Because, you know...
It's a laugh or cry situation and we're choosing to laugh. But that's terrible.
Bobo. Another fault on the coaching. Where's Bobo gone again? Gone missing again. Ridiculous.
He did have one play, didn't he? But it got blown up. I feel like it was a flag. I think there was a screen to Bobo that got flagged back. Maybe I'm dreaming it. I'm pretty sure there was.
Yeah, I think you might be right, actually.
No, I think you are right, yeah.
Yeah. And Charbonnet got one pulled back, and I think Charbonnet had like a 20-yard, like 15, that I think Kobe Parkinson held on, from what I remember, because of course he did. Fucking one play that Kobe's out there, he holds on it. The one time we used the tight end, which is another thing that we keep harping on about, the lack of tight end usage is just baffling. But yeah, we're ending on a positive. If we've got nothing else to say, if our crisis talks have reached its conclusion, I'll extend one final question to you all as we round off. Is the season over, or is it salvageable?
Salvageable.
Season's not over. We've done enough good stuff this year to get ourselves into the playoffs. And as long as we get to the playoffs with a reasonably fit roster, the talent is there like it has always been there for us to get hot and go and do okay. You know, maybe get more than one win. The problem I have is that for all the negative reasons we've mentioned this evening on this pod, I feel like we're not consistently good enough. On our day, we've shown we can blow the Lions away. If we can blow the Lions away in the way we did, we can beat a lot of teams in a playoff situation, in a one-game situation. The problem is you need to be able to put it together for three, four games in a row to win a Super Bowl. And against that caliber of component, I don't back us to do it. So season's not over. We'll see when we get there how healthy we are, but not over. Just looking less likely.
Yeah, I'd say it's not over. Like, even though it has been a dooming podcast, but it needed to be done after just the ugliness of the scenes of this season. Sorry if you hear a lot of tapping. I've got two dogs running around me, like idiots. But no, it's not far from over. And the thing with the NFL, what's beautiful is we still got the pieces there, and I still do believe that we are a few links in the chain from making it, everyone being like, where's this been? But then we are also so, like, we could go five links less in 2 weeks to, like, it's all gone to shit. Like, I do think we could be a couple of links. Like, the thing with the NFL is it happens, like, and I'm only using this as context before anyone tries saying, oh, you think you're going to get to the Super Bowl? Look what the Buccaneers did in that season. Halfway through the season, three quarters through the season, everyone ripped them off for dead. Like, oh, the Tom Brady experience didn't work, this, that, and the other. They scraped into the playoffs and then just dummied everyone. I know we don't have any evidence for that, but that's how easy things can click. For whatever reason, or however they're done, that's the beauty of the NFL. That's why I love the sport over any other sport, because things can change just like that, and you don't know why or how, but they
I'll add this in. I'll add this into what you're saying there, Pez. I think teams wouldn't necessarily want us in the playoffs because they don't know which Seahawks team is going to turn up. It could be the Seahawks team that turned up against the Lions, or it could be the Seahawks team that didn't turn up against the Ravens. They don't know what they're getting with us. If you've got someone like, say, the Commanders crept into the playoffs, people would much rather have that Commanders team than the Seahawks team, because what you're getting with the Commanders is fairly consistent. Seahawks are either a B-plus or an F-minus right now. And on our day, we can beat most franchises with the talent we've got. So we are every bit a wild card if we get a wild card spot in the playoffs. I think people won't know exactly what's going to turn up. DK Metcalf gets hot on a day that Geno's throwing well and the calls are going well and Ken Walker's playing well. We're winning a game because the defense has been consistently good. So that gives us a chance.
Do you want one note to finish on to laugh at? This is how much Sean McVay is just donkeying on us, because Daryl Henderson scored a touchdown against us, didn't he?
They've waved him, haven't they?
Was Daryl Henderson the one who scored a touchdown?
I think so.
Gave him the lead.
Yeah.
It was, wasn't it? He was that important to that team. Kyren Williams is back and he's been cut. Literally laughing at us, saying, we beat you with a guy we didn't even want on the roster.
Yeah, they'll get him back on practice squad probably, won't they? Or he'll get picked up. But
yeah, they need to make that move to get Kyren Williams on. He'll go back onto the pity squad. Anyway.
For what it's worth, season's done. By the way, in my opinion, it's.
You think so?
Yeah.
You can. You think we get to the playoffs and get one and done?
You are.
Oh no, he doesn't think we'll get to the playoffs.
That's just.
We will get to the playoffs.
Collapse.
Really?
Yeah.
We only need like one game. We need to win one game.
My take on it is, when I said the season's far from over, is just making the playoffs. Playoffs are a totally different beast with this team. That's a totally different podcast. That's a different rabbit hole to go down, in my opinion, because this team evolves into something with shit now. But we could have what's one of them things where the reverse happens, where we've been shit all season, whereas we normally are decent all season and then shit in the playoffs. If we scrape in the playoffs this year like we normally do, maybe we might just flip it.
We will
be really good.
It's done. Sorry to end it on a note. It's done. We're going 0-4. Titans will beat us because we're getting gashed by the run. Derrick Henry will run all over us. Steelers is another trap game, like we said at the start of the season. And Cardinals is a cursed place to go to end the season. As always, I could see us beating the Cardinals. I could see us losing to the Titans. And to be honest with you, an 0-4 stretch, I think you could see this team implode on the season and implode on the coaches. I could see this team really turning on how they're being coached, on the decisions that are being made. I'm telling you, man, an 0-4 streak against these teams coming up, I'm telling you, this locker room could really turn. I have a feeling it will, because after that but you've got to be, if you were a player in that locker room, I'm sorry, but in your WhatsApp groups away from the coaches, you're not saying anything positive about them, you know, and then you go in 0-4. You get Shane Waldron. He's a leopard. Don't change his spots. It's going to be the same offense for the next 4 weeks. It's going to be the same defense. Geno is obviously not quite right, so we may well have to see Drew Lock for a game or two. Who knows more? Ken Walker's going to be gone. I don't buy. We steal any wins
please
over these.
Please, can we stop? Please, can we stop?
I'll say go Hawks.
so depressing.
But you get the point.
And we do.
I think it's done.
We do.
Anyway,
it's a beautiful ending to a very depressing episode.
Oh, well, at least you found it beautiful, Pez.
Gotta find the positives.
I hope I hope you've enjoyed it tonight. I hope you've kind of seen where we've been coming from. We didn't just want to talk about the Rams. Obviously, it's a quick turnaround to Thanksgiving. You know, we've got the 49ers on Thursday night. So we thought this is a bit more of a listenable.
Action green.
Action green. I'm not sure how much action we'll get out of them, Prez, but we'll see.
5-1. 5-1, brother. 5-1.
Stop it.
Drew Locke led fucking thingy. I'm going to wake up and fucking... McIntosh is going to have a touchdown, run for near 100 yards because he's a monster, and everyone's going to be like, where's this guy been? And then DK is going to go off. He's going to have two touchdowns, and they're just going to use him as a wide receiver one because Lockett's just too injured. They need to rest him. So DK is going to get all the work. He loves dumbing the Niners. We're going to wake up. We're all going to be conned into a win, and everyone's going to be like, oh, it's fine. It's fine. And then we're going to get dummied by the fucking Cowboys.
God bless you. God bless you, because you've just created the most perfect meme little 20-second 30 clip there that I could just beautifully edit together, put it at the start of the next pod, and 2 days later, and then there's Pez at the start of the next pod, absolutely losing his shit again. So thanks for doing that on a lovely memeable note. But no, whatever happens.
Mitch is perplexed with what's just happened from your rant to my absolute insane positivity.
Whatever happens with this team, certain people might not be here to see it out, but we'll always be here to see it out. We'll come back and talk about it. Whatever happens, for good or for bad, you know, we'll be back to talk about it. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. Just search at We Talk Seahawks. You will find us on those social media platforms. If you want to join our Discord, where we all have a meltdown every single game week, you should have seen mine this week. It was absolutely glorious. I'm not ashamed of it at all, though. All I am ashamed of is saying I'm Shane Waldhorny. I regret that comment. I regret that comment so much, you wouldn't believe. But come in and join us and take the piss and have a laugh with us and get through it by... It's more of a group counselling session more than anything. Than the Discord server. It's a counselling platform. You can come and express your opinions and feel relief for not feeling like you're going crazy, because we're all going stir crazy at this point. So come and join it. You can find that link in our pinned tweet on Twitter. It's always a good time. Other than that, go Hawks.
Go Hawks.